Hello and welcome to the Hard Card Podcast, recorded and filmed at Authentic Collectibles HQ in Perth, Western Australia. For the first time, we have an in-studio guest here in the West. We're joined by the only supercars driver who calls Perth home, Andre Heimgartner. Andre, thanks for popping down.
No worries, good to be on.
How do you find life here in Perth? It is definitely slightly unique. I know what it's like to travel with the supercar circus and live here. Yeah. How are you finding it?
Yeah, it's good. Obviously, it comes with its own challenges, but I don't know. I think it sounds a lot worse than it is.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the calendar, it is worse for more rounds than living over east, but surprisingly, it's, you know, marginal. It's not, you know, like everyone thinks you're on a plane 10 hours every single trip. So, and to have the family support with my partner and children's, you know, almost more important. So.
Yeah, I mean, by the time you're on the plane, whether it's a two-hour flight or a three-hour flight, doesn't necessarily make a huge difference.
And I think the way I got it around Brad was that they obviously are located in Albury, which is almost more inconvenient because you regardless have to fly from Albury to Sydney or Albury to Melbourne and then fly again somewhere else. So it's no worse than if I actually was living in Albury. So, yeah, it's working out all right, loving it so far.
Yeah, perfect. Now, am I right in thinking that you did announce that you and Gemma are having another baby in the press conference after you won in Taupo? Is that what happened?
Kind of. We haven't really announced anything officially. She's quite a long way along, but we've just sort of been telling everyone as we sort of go. No particular reason. I think the first one you're super excited, and then the second one you're just like, okay, let's just have our fingers crossed and just hope everything goes well. But yeah, for sure, we're having a little baby boy. So that's exciting for me, and I think as a guy, you always want a little son, and don't know if I'll get him into racing.
I was about to say, I just bought a midget go-kart this week, so you can have it in about 5 years' time if you like. I'll sell it on to you.
I don't know. It's maybe pick AFL or some other sport.
Yeah, you say that, but then you'll get
a choice.
You go, come on, let's get into it. It's been a big few weeks for you. Congrats on the second career supercars win. It's just so difficult to win at that level, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very hard. I think also, you know, there's a bunch of teams, you know, two or three, if that the wins get shared amongst.
Yeah.
And, you know, even people like Chaz Mostert has sort of struggled to win a race the last couple of years. And, you know, that's Chaz, who we know what he's done. So, look, it's incredibly difficult. And, the teams are just so good now. And unfortunately, we needed to wait for some wet weather and some different things. But like we're closing. We've had something like 12 podiums and like come second, I don't know, five or six times the last couple of years. So our time is coming, but it's incredibly hard. It's something that, you know, the answers aren't always there. You know, why Triple Eight is always at the top, you know, and they can sort of seem to do it with any drivers that they tend to bring on. And you try and analyze that from the outside, and obviously they've got something going on that the rest of us wish we had, but it's just an internal battle that goes on for ages. And I feel like we're creeping in the right direction throughout my career, the nearly 10 years I've been in supercars. Tend to be progressing in the right direction if you look where I finished in the championship over the years. So look, we're creeping towards the right end, but it's a grind and it's a bit tiring sometimes.
I guess Gen 3 is kind of, in some respects, it can make it easier to get a result, but it can make it harder too because, you know, we've seen Team 18 win a race last year. You know, Matt Stone Racing have won a couple of races now. You know, there's teams that probably with Gen 2 hardware weren't in a position to win race. Now, if you do get it right, Triple Eight's obviously hard to run down, but you can, every team can have their day, it seems, at the moment.
Yeah, I think it was interesting, obviously, Gen 3, there was different options. You know, you had those Triple Eight aligned teams, which, you know, probably to start out, you got a good, and even started this year, you know, Matt Stone Racing won a race. It was quite a good leg up. But I guess, you know, as time goes on, the cars develop, philosophies develop, you need to understand the bigger picture of how the car works to make it work. So then that becomes less so. So there's, forever moving sort of power shift. Obviously, Erebus were very, very strong last year, started to dwindle a little bit towards the end of the year, I think, from what I saw, but still very, very strong. And then this year, obviously, Brody's been away, but it looks like they're struggling a bit more than they did last year and didn't have that dominance. So it's very interesting, the transition through the years of this new car, you know, how it came out first and now what we're dealing with now. But yeah, I hope BJ has our time sometime soon.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about BJR during the transition to Gen 3 just because of how incredibly well the team did when they went to the Car of the Future back in 2013 or whatever. You know, last season was by no means any sort of disaster, but was there any disappointment that, you know, like you say, you had a bunch of second places that, you know, the win didn't come, that maybe the team didn't, it was, you know, it was Erebus that had the upswing, you know, and it wasn't you guys that came out, burst out of those blocks in Gen 3?
Well, for sure. I think like as a group collectively, we obviously didn't do a good enough job because we didn't win the championship.
Yeah.
But, you know, we came out the blocks pretty strong, you know, was fastest in all the testing and then had a really good start to the year, was like fourth or fifth in the championship, you know, our arms throw to leading the championship, you know, three quarters of the way through the year. So it was a good year for us in comparison to the other years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, could have we really genuinely fought for the championship? Probably not. Didn't really have that outright speed. And, yeah, it's a hard one because obviously Erebus did a great job, but we have no idea what they did to make it good. You know, we did everything we thought we could do. And I think what's changed now also is the level of teams out there is so high. You know, you've got Triple Eight, always been high, DJR, you know, operate at a high level. You've got Grows, which is, you know, growing and growing and obviously operating at a high level. Walkinshaw again, Andretti, all the stuff. Like there's so many good teams that, you know, it's harder to get that jump and harder to get some distance. So, you know, what happened back in the day was probably, you know, BJR did do an amazing job. And, you know, back then there was Triple Eight and FPR, whatever you want to call, were probably the two main teams. And Walkinshaw was, you know, going through a bit of a struggle period. So it was probably, you know, easier to stand out and to do a good job in that period. But now, you know, the field's stacked as far as teams, you know, everyone's risen to a certain level and it's very high.
I guess you guys have kind of felt that this year. If you take Taupo out of the equation, like it was a pretty tough start to the year. You don't have to be missing it by much to look really average, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately it's one of those things. It's, yeah, we, in hindsight, I think a couple of things we were doing last year with the car hurt us, but it only became prevalent or obvious at the start of this year with some different things that got adjusted on the car.
Yeah.
So we addressed those and we're moving forward. But, yeah, it doesn't take much. And last year we noticed that too. You know, you could be qualifying in the top five and then make a few adjustments, do a couple of things, and then be 20th. So, yeah, it's very much how this category is now, whereas the other car I felt like, you know, we had a lot more knowledge on the car and how to set it up, what window to be in, what we could adjust, which is a, you know, advantage. But I could almost within reason guarantee I'd be, you know, 12th or higher.
Yeah.
You know, so a bad day was 12th and then, you know, you can be second or whatever if you really nail it. So, but now it's not like that. Yeah. You don't nail it and she's 24th, so.
Do you feel that, you know, there was a bit of talk about, I think there was something about braking performance or something, you know, that you guys were trying to work on? Obviously, there were some circumstances that played into your hands in New Zealand, but do you feel like you actually, even on Sunday in the dry, you seemed closer to it than you maybe have been? Do you feel like strides have been made in terms of performance?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one. I think looking at the start of the year, those two rounds, Bathurst race pace this year wasn't bad, but that's not our weakness. Our weakness was qualifying.
Yep.
That AGP, even though we went right last year, that was sort of patched because it was a new track.
Yeah.
So we were able to make it more stable. And even though we didn't have the outright speed, we could actually achieve a good lap time by just staying on the track and not having big slides.
Yeah.
But those fast flow tracks is, you know, long story short, and high grip is what we're lacking at. So to start the year at those two tracks is brutal for us.
Yeah.
But it was good because we also learned some things, like we had some braking issues we had, and really made us dig deep and look at our processes, look at everything. So I think, you know, it's not a true reflection of how this year will go. You know, looking at, don't want to speak out of turn or jinx anything, looking at the calendar going forward, there's some really good rounds for us. You know, ones that were on pole last year, you know, getting multiple podiums a year, what tracks that I historically go very good at, and that suit our philosophy at the moment or our strength. So, yeah, I think it's something we need to work on. You know, you can't afford to have those bad rounds. You see the guys that are winning the championship, they're there every week, and that's, I guess, what we need to work on.
Yeah. let's just have a quick chat about Taupo. Obviously, incredible result.
Yeah.
I think it was a great result to have a Kiwi win for the poor fans who were sitting there in the rain. You've talked a bit about how special that area is to you. I think you mentioned like riding motorbikes out the back of the track. But what is your connection to Taupo and to that circuit and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, it's at first I didn't, when we decided we were going to race there, I was, cool, But I sort of forgot, the time I'd spent there and the connection I had with that track. And as it got closer, I guess you get more emotionally involved. But my family from when I was a young age had a holiday house, just a little house in Taupo. So spent a lot of time there. And then as I was growing up, my dad used to race in the Holden Car Club.
Mm-hmm.
And Taupo, probably not many people know, used to be a much smaller track before it got expanded in 2006 or whatever,
for A1 GP.
So it just used to be this little goat track out the back, and my dad used to race there, and I just remember spending a lot of time out the back with other people's kids riding little quad bikes around the back paddock and watching dad race around, and obviously spending a lot of time in Taupo, going to the hot springs there and all sorts of stuff like that. So it definitely had a big meaning to me, and sort of more so as we got closer, and even just the A1 GP thing. I remember I used to watch that. I think they came twice. In the grandstand thinking, oh, how cool is this?
Yeah.
And then the fact we get to race there and, it's just, there's always emotion connected to it, for us Kiwis, I think.
Yeah. I just want to ask you a bit about your transition from racing in New Zealand. Like, I don't know a whole heap about what you did in New Zealand. I know you raced Formula Ford Super Tourers and that sort of stuff. How did you kind of make the transition from doing that to coming across the ditch and racing in Australia?
Yeah, it's an interesting story. It's so obviously my dad started racing, I got the bug, and we used to live on a bit of a farm outside Auckland, and used to get the yellow pages and used to go, oh, hey Dad, here's a kart shop. Can we go? Can we get it? And used to pester, and then one day eventually I ended up getting him to actually do something. We went there and he bought this old purple and black go-kart, and we had a lighting company at the time, and there was this big driveway down the side, and my sister actually got to drive it first because she was older than me.
Yep.
And then I got to drive it, and then we went, did a whole lot of testing, and then sort of got into go-karting that way. And it was always something that was just to spend time with my dad, because my parents split up when I was quite young, when I was probably 6 or 7. So it was something I really cherished, spending those times with my dad after school. Would go testing at the Mount Wellington Car Club.
Yep.
Mount Wellington Kart Club, that's not there anymore. It's just some really cool memories and good time spent with my dad. We never really traveled that far. We didn't do any big championships. We never had the best gear.
Yep.
It was always just, something to do with my dad. And then we, in New Zealand, you can get your license when you're 12 to race on a full track, which is pretty crazy now. I think of it. I see a 12-year-old, I'm like, shit. Like, I wouldn't trust you to race me.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got a Nissan Skyline, just an old one with a H pattern. And I'd go to my dad's car club days and pound around. And that's sort of where I learned how to, change gears, do all that sort of stuff. And then it progressed into Formula V, which is Formula First or whatever you want to call it. Did that for 2 years, ran our own car, and it was a bit of a struggle. And I was pretty useless really to start with.
Yeah.
A lot of people said to my dad, oh, you should just not bother because he's just a bit useless. And I was looking back at some of the footage and stuff. I'm like, oh, what was I thinking? pretty crazy. And so from there we're like, okay, well, I think me and my dad really enjoyed, the racing we enjoyed, but just the process, we'd spend hours in the car driving from one track to other. Obviously in New Zealand, you don't really fly. We'd drive and we'd talk and spend a lot of time together. And, I think those sort of days is what's helped me in my career a lot, because there wasn't many results to sort of be happy about. So we'd have to be in the car sitting there thinking, okay, what positives did come from this weekend? What things, did we improve from last week? And you're like, okay, well, I had a good battle with this person. I did this and did that. And that was a good positive versus what happened before.
Yeah.
So you're slowly looking for those little improvements in all these little areas. And then we decided to go to Formula Ford. And then that was a lot more successful. I used to do a lot of testing to try and get up to speed with that, with a guy called John Crawford, which was in Christchurch. and did the national series of that and the South Island series. So I was doing two at once.
Yep.
And this is sort of really where I started to accelerate with my learning and different things. And then the second year, I think I did the Formula Ford Championship. I won it, won the South Island Championship as well. And then we're sort of still at that stage, we weren't totally, like, I never thought, and my dad never thought either, that, you know, we're going to go race supercars or this is going to be something. We were just having a ball. My dad, you know, he is very hard, sort of working hard. You know, he loves the process of it. We love the journey together.
Yep.
I guess that's what we were doing. And then the Super Tours, I remember in 2011, got announced, and that's when I won the Formula Ford Championship.
Yep.
And we're like, okay, sweet, this could be, you know, something cool. And the New Zealand V8s at that time was booming. You know, we actually had people earning a little bit of money from it and different things. So we thought, okay, this could be quite good. We'll get into that. And maybe, you know, we can just keep doing that and it'd be good fun, you know, good fun to do with my dad. And anyway, we got into doing the first season of that. And then we never actually at all was looking at coming to Australia. That was sort of the limit of what we wanted to do. I don't think my dad wanted to spend any more money. And then David John from Team Kiwi was restarting his thing, and through Craig Bread contacted me and said, hey, look, John wants to return to Australia, you know, Team Kiwi car, all that sort of stuff, and wants to do the Porsche Carrera Cup. And again, we never really looked at any of this because it was, you know, a 500, 600 grand exercise. And that was mental for us. We actually did a bit of state Formula Ford over in Australia, but we never did the national one because it was just seemed so expensive. And anyway, Team Kiwi offered, you know, heavily subsidized drive, and we thought, okay, shit, why not? Let's give it a go. And went into that and did really well. So I was doing Super Tours and the Porsche Carrera Cup. And at that stage, I was still in school, as you can imagine, doing that much racing. In two series, one over here. You're not at school much. And then after that, the next year, had another good opportunity. Again, wasn't really looking to do DVS as such. You know, we're looking at opportunities, but it wasn't really going to happen. We Murray Pickering, Finance Easy. There's a couple of Finance Easy cars that were run out of Paul Morris's place. So he's based on the Gold Coast, has a whole lot of dealerships and stuff. He's G'd up about getting into supercars. So he started a two-car team, me, Josh Hunter, and, you know, that was subsidized well, gave us a car. It was bloody awesome. Felt like I was joining a supercar team. And then, did that. And then did the next year with Matt White, with Finance Easy again, the Super Tours again, and then that was, I think, 2014 or something, maybe. And that's when I moved over to Australia. So 2014, I would have been, I don't know, 18. So moved from New Zealand to Australia, and I was living in the back part of an instructor that worked at Norwell, his house. And, it just sort of, kept sort of progressing, I guess. And we had a good year. Cam Waters was in that year, and I think he won the championship in 2014, maybe.
It was 2015, I think. Sure he was 2015.
Yeah, 2016. I can't remember. It was that long ago. But there's some fast guys there. And then we, again, another Kiwi team wanted to get into supercars. And there was Tony Latino. God bless him, passed away, unfortunately. And so we did the wild card, and we did really well with that. And then, the next year, obviously, got into supercars with him and that team. But yeah, a bit of an interesting journey for me. It was something where I never was like that golden child. I never, you know, was one of the ones, you know, everyone wanted to sponsor or everyone wanted to help.
It was just on the path to professional motorsport from the word go.
Everyone thought I was a bit shit always, you know, even recently, you know, people in New Zealand and, you know, even supercars, you know, my whole life people have been writing me off and doing that stuff, but that's fine. And just fly under the radar and chip away and, yeah, I think now, you know, proved a lot of people wrong and still got a long way to go.
Yeah. I mean, the super black thing was obviously great. Then that came to an end. You know, the spell with LDM was always going to be fairly tough. I mean, you've said before, you said after you won that race at the Bend in 2021 that you were close to chucking the whole thing in and just going to get a real job. Why was that? Was it just a case of like, you know, it gets hard to go and try and raise the money to drive for teams like that? Do you just get exhausted from the grind of?
Well, the whole thing's hard, I think. And, you know, it's no secret, or, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit that I suffered from a bit of depression and anxiety and stuff like that. And I think that whole process, you know, you get into supercars with Super Black and you realize your dream, and then that got taken away from me because someone brought more money, and then I sort of left on the sidelines with no real other option. And then you go to LDM, and that was obviously challenging.
Yep.
And then it was over. Like, after the LDM thing, I didn't have a co-drive.
Yeah,
I had nothing. And then luckily my manager managed to get some sponsors together, and we put together a Porsche Carrera Cup championship. But it was just a hard time for me. I think, you know, as a young kid, you know, moving away from home in New Zealand when I was so young, it was bloody difficult to figure out life and, you know, what you're meant to be doing, you know, mixing with different people. And it was just a lot of emotions and a lot to process for, you know, someone like myself. And, you know, I hit pretty rock bottom through that period, and really, I feel like it's been a positive in my career so far. It's built a lot of resilience, a lot of mental toughness. But yeah, it's something I really had to, you know, sit there and go, is this just gonna how it's gonna be, or am I gonna, you know, just try and turn this around and do everything I possibly can to try and get back into supercars and to that point? And I remember thinking at a certain point, I'm like, you know, fuck this. I'm not just gonna sit here, do this. I'm never gonna let anyone like ever be someone's like second choice as a driver. And then I focused my energy in those directions, and slowly it started to turn around. And then obviously the Ash Walsh got injured. I stepped in and then was leading that race by 20 seconds at Gold Coast, and then it sort of flowed from there. So it was I can't emphasize how tough it was that time. I got a qualification in finance, mortgage broking. And I was fully that Gold Coast weekend was the last weekend that I was going to race. Full stop. You know, I had everything lined up to do other things, and then God or whatever you want to call it looked down on me and gave me the opportunity, and I was there and ready to execute, and we made it happen. But for sure, it's something different about sort of my career. I think a few people have a similar story, but you know, you see these people that cruise in as the big dogs, and they sort of had that forever rising thing to success. But my story has been very different. It's been a lot harder, a lot more hard fought, and you know, even now we're still, me and BJ are to some extent a bit of the underdogs. And, you know, it fuels me. I love it, and it's just, I guess, part of who I am now.
So when did Todd Kelly come calling after the Gold Coast stuff and that? At what point did you start to think, hang on, a new opportunity is really going to present itself here?
Yeah, well, it was an interesting process that it was something that I don't often like talking myself up or telling people how good I am.
Yeah.
Because I'm not that kind of person. But I was with Matt White, and Matt White thought he had a sponsor to run me in DVS. And that was in a Nissan. So we went and met with Todd Kelly because that was part of the whole program. It was a Nissan, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I was in that room with Todd, and it's just one of those things, I guess, the right timing. I said the right things. Todd was feeling nice or feeling whatever. He was obviously thinking of retiring, Todd, at the time, and he wanted someone to replace him. And I was sitting in that room, and we're talking back and forth, and he said, why do you – I think this is how it went from what I can remember. It'll be close. He said, why do you – something along the lines like, why do you think, you should – get that drive, and what's your aspirations for the future and stuff. And I said, you know, I came very close to winning the Porsche Carrera Cup championship, was probably, you know, the fastest, give or take, in that. And I said, well, I've proven I can beat everyone in the Porsche Carrera Cup championship, so I want to do the same here and prove I can beat everyone in DVS, so that there's, you know, teams don't have any reason not to pick me up. And that was sort of what I was trying to achieve. And I guess for him, he saw that Gold Coast drive and saw something potentially a bit special there. And then, you know, saw how motivated I was, and he knew how hard I worked outside of the car with fitness and different things. And he was looking to retire, but he wanted to pick the right person. He tried to get Matt Campbell for a bit, but he went overseas.
Yeah.
And then I guess he, you know, it just lined up with him, and he decided he wanted to retire, and then it was on from there. So I owe a lot to Todd and their family. They were great to me over the years, and, you know, for sure they gave me the opportunity. You know, Brad, after that co-drive, didn't have anything available.
Yeah.
So yeah, Todd and those guys, amazing. But yeah, funny how it sort of works out. And sometimes you say the right things and get yourself in and play it just right. And then sometimes you look like a bit of a dick and you say the wrong things and you wonder why it didn't happen. But it was an interesting sort of scenario of events, I guess.
Yeah. So that was a good time for you at the Kellys, wasn't it? I mean, they had a different way of working and operating their team, but it always seemed like you enjoyed it there.
Yeah, it was good. I was extremely loyal to Todd. Like, I'd probably still be there now if they were still involved.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. I'm a pretty loyal person. So, but yeah, it was great. I like, you know, it's similar in some ways to BJR where, you know, if I had a problem, I'd just ring up Todd and go, "Hey, mate," or if I wanted to know something, ring him up and talk to him about it, and you go straight to the beans of it. What I didn't like about other teams was that, you know, the CEO or the boss or the person who owned the team was not really contactable or personable in that way. You know, they weren't on the ground all the time. They didn't fully understand a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Or they just didn't want to talk to you about certain things because you're the driver and that's that.
Yeah.
You know, where that environment was quite nice. You felt part of the process and all that stuff. And yeah, it was a grind for sure. I think, you know, Todd and everyone, including me, would admit we didn't really achieve 100% what we wanted to through that period. But yeah, we had some good times, had a race win, which I think was, you know, a good sort of payback some really good memories.
Yeah. And the move to BJR after that, it seems like you've kind of found, you know, a happy home there, even, you know, tough start to this season. But, you know, you're the lead driver in a team that is a consistently sort of capable of providing a top 10 car generally, you know. Is that sort of a mid to long-term future for yourself there, do you think?
Yeah, I think. Obviously you can never talk too far ahead, but the move to BJR was, you know, I've always kept in contact with Brad, obviously, from what happened in the Gold Coast, and I think he always naturally hoped and thought that I would race for the team one day, and obviously being a Kiwi too, he likes that, doesn't mind a Kiwi.
And
it was something that at the time the Groves were taking over that team, and it was unknown, you know, where they would get, you know, they obviously had great aspirations, but the actual promise or the actual facts I had in front of me was that BJR at the time was a better team and could provide me with a better car, which was the next one, which he, you know, did good things with. So, moved there and, I love it. I really love Albury, surprisingly.
Yeah.
It's actually a really good vibe, almost bought a place there a couple of times. But I like the team. I like the atmosphere. You know, I think there's just something honest and hardworking about, you know, everything there. Yeah. I like how Brad operates. He's very transparent, you know, makes you're part of the process, the decision makings. It's just a great place to be. And I think, what I realized after all the shit I went through those, you know, harder years is that I've got to actually also enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, And I'm still young. I'm only 28. I shaved my beard a bit so people can still see I'm young.
You're looking younger. Yeah.
But I look older there probably. I've got, touch wood, you know, 10, 11, 12 years left. So that's a long time, you know, to be doing. You know, I've already been doing it nearly 10 years. So it's something that at some point it's like, okay, you know, success and everything's great and that's ultimately what we're aiming for. But the enjoyment of it is, you know, and for your mental health is a large part of it. I don't want to get burnt out. It's
you got to like going to work.
Got to like going to work. So, and it affects everything, your home life. You know, when you're not racing isn't going well or you're, you know, in those awkward negotiation contract times and you're anxious and all that sort of stuff, it really ruins your whole life.
Yeah.
And puts everything on a, you know, cloud of doubt and stuff. So, look, I just love it at the moment. I love the group I'm working with. Tony Woodward, my engineer, is young as well. And, you know, he's got a big future ahead of him, and look, we're all boarding in the right direction, so it's good.
The one thing that BJR always does well is pit stops.
Yeah.
Like, insanely good at pit stops. As, you know, you're the lead driver in the team, so that puts you at a really good position. Like, even if you look at Taupo on that Saturday race, like, knowing that you can actually make time up in the lane. That must be a good feeling when you're, you know, trying to execute a race strategy.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. You know, I've often thought, and what's been motivating is that if we could just get a faster car, and we could be in that top and just qualify higher up consistently, mate. We, like, the amount of races and stuff we could win or do well in, purely just because of our pit stop. If I do nothing but maintain my positions, you know,
you will jump the car. Like, you'll make the position
all
the
time. Like, I've done, I joked a couple of times with Cam or at some other people. It's like, when I come in behind you, I always know I'm going to come out in front of you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when you can't, especially because we're at the, normally at the back of the pit lane. So when we have a slightly faster pit lane and I'm coming right on their ass, I just need a little bit so that they can't get out, then they have to go behind.
That's right, yeah.
And it's happened three or four times to Cam, and I think every time it happens, you know, their team gets under pressure and, you know, a little bit happened with Walkinshaw. You know, they knew our pit stops were fast and it puts everyone under pressure and our guys just execute. So, look, it's exciting for me. I just think, like, if we can just get that little bit
A little bit more pace.
We could really – like, that's a strength no one else really has, I think.
Yeah,
people have
sure.
strong pit stops, but nothing is consistent, touch wood, as what we have. And, you know,
what is it? Is it just the effort goes into it? You know, they've got their pit stop 100%. Car and that sort of stuff. Is it just because they actually do put a premium on doing it well?
Yeah, I think so. I think it comes back from a lot. Wally Story was big on this, from what I hear. I hear all these stories, of course, from Brad. I was telling a story.
Yeah.
And it started a long time ago, and it's something that's evolved and they take great pride in. And the money goes towards a Christmas party. So,
there you go.
That helps. But it's just, it's like anything, it's just the effort that goes into it. And I feel like that's part of the BJR culture. You know, they don't, you know, a lot of other teams, when it gets to 5 o'clock, everyone clocks off, they go, poof, and they go disperse their own ways.
Yep.
And it's more of a union kind of feel where it's like, oh, I'm not working this because, you know, I need this time off, or, you know, I've worked too many hours here or there. Like, our guys don't overwork, but there's not a major rush to get home. You know, there's a lot of toolbox meetings.
Yep.
It's a very community feel. Certain people, well, a lot of the team actually hang out outside of, you know, the team, which is
unique. There's guys that live together and that sort of stuff as well, isn't
there? So it's unique as far as that goes. So, you know, they have that camaraderie between themselves, which I think really helps.
Yep.
And then, they don't mind putting in the work. You know, I can't say exactly what they do, but they definitely outwork everyone in that area. And just the years they've been doing it, it's hard to catch up, I guess, when you haven't been doing it.
Here's a fun fact. As we sit here, Wally Story is on a plane to Perth to go on a fishing trip with my old man. That's not even the word of a lie. He's literally on his way here right now. I guess, and if we keep trending towards, you know, getting rid of fuel drops and that sort of stuff, like, pit stop performance has scope to become a bigger – a bigger advantage, you know.
I think it's good too, because it adds in another part. The team becomes more important, you know. And you know, historically, mechanics haven't been the most fittest. You know, they drink a lot. They do, you know, the old school sort of thing. And I guess this way, you know, some of them have had to shape up.
Yeah,
you know, had to get their reaction times down and work on, you know, their concentration and their psychology and doing a pit stop themselves. I'm sure it's quite challenging. You know, I'd be quite useless at it for a while until you get everything down. So it's an art in its own in its own right. And you see NASCAR, they have a separate crew just for that.
Yeah.
But our guys are actually mechanics and then have to perform at an elite level changing these tires. So yeah, it's great. I think it's good. It gives another element to the sport, gives another element to the team, and gives them something to fight and feel proud for as well.
Yeah. New co-driver for the endurance races this year in Declan Fraser. Slightly different dynamic going from, you know, someone really experienced like Dale Wood that you had before, then going to a younger driver, sort of someone who's, you know, up and coming in the sport. What's your first impressions of Decker been?
It's been good. He's full of enthusiasm, which is good. What really wants to soak himself in, and he's actually had a bit of, you know, some good experience at Triple A, and obviously Tickford. So he's been good. We did a test day at the start of the year, and he was, you know, pretty speedy and you know, doing everything we want. And it was Dale did a great job for us, and you know, nothing particularly wrong, I guess, that he did. It was just you know, we were just having a bad run at Bathurst, you know, for us, and we needed to do something to change it up. And we decided just to go with a young guy, and young guys seem to be going really good lately and adaptable. And
someone coming off a full season, you can't go wrong. Gen 3 car, that's a massive bonus. You've got to grab that opportunity.
For sure. And I think it reminded me of when I had done a full year of main game and I felt pretty tuned up and then no one picked me.
Yeah, exactly.
I knew I could have done a good job. So I was in almost exactly his situation.
Yeah.
I think he'll do a good job. He's a good young bloke. We get on well. We're similar height, all the stuff. And, just did a full-time year and had some good results. Potentially didn't have the car at times, but, so exciting.
All right, let's finish with the Authentic Collectibles Top 10 Shootout. Yep. 10 rapid-fire questions. Unsurprisingly, a lot of them are about collectibles.
Yeah.
We'll start with number one. Who was your sporting idol growing up?
It's pretty easy to guess. Probably Greg Murphy.
Yeah.
Being growing up, obviously watching at Booker Co and stuff like that.
Did you ever collect motor racing memorabilia, posters or trading cards or anything when you were a kid?
A few posters.
Mm-hmm.
I had one model car that was great. Craig Baird's Team Kiwi Holden from a long time ago. But not too much other than that because I think it was quite expensive or something. But my dad, mum just never... I always wanted it.
I mean, the models are expensive, but we say they're great value for money here, don't we? We do. do you collect things from your own motorsport career?
Yeah, I do. Early in my career, sold a couple of helmets, but sort of learnt to regret that. Collect those and then obviously milestone things. So when I win a race, I try and get the model car and then get a frame done up with all the pictures and stuff like that. But, just little things like that. As you get older, you think, shit, I've been doing this for a while. I got to have something to show for it when I have a nice little room in my house. So you're slowly collecting things that one day will go on a wall and go in that room.
Well, now you live in Perth, you can come and collect your models personally. Save on shipping. You don't have to wait for them to arrive in the post. What's your favourite piece of Andre Heimgartner memorabilia?
Just trying to think. It's probably the surfboard that I have from that Gold Coast race.
Yep.
That sort of changed everything. I have that in my lounge room and it's just, that probably has the most meaning, I guess, to it because of obviously what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you collect or have anything interesting from outside of motorsport?
Outside of motorsport, not really. I collect money.
Yep,
that's a good one.
Apart from that. You've got children now, so you can give that hobby away. You're about to get really good at spending it and losing it.
Yeah, already after one, you learn that. Not really. Not really.
What's the ultimate race car that you'd like to own or drive?
The ultimate race car. I don't think there's particularly one, but I am quite fond and do quite like the old DTM days.
Yeah.
With the Mercedes and BMW and stuff like that. And
like the early 90s cars, those sorts of ones.
Really cool,
they are very cool. Yeah. Name a personality or a driver or someone from motorsport that you'd love to work with. It can be past, present, whatever.
Trying to think. I guess Scott Dixon probably be one. Obviously a Kiwi. I've sort of looked up to him and liked what he's done and the longevity he had in his career and just how he keeps producing the results and just a good guy.
Still amazing. Well, bad luck, Decker. It's a Heimgartner decent pairing at Bathurst next year, I reckon.
You never know.
as an honorary West Aussie now, Eagles or Dockers?
Well, neither. I'm a Carlton.
I'm a Cats fan, so I can't say too much.
Yeah. if I had to pick one, probably Fremantle.
Yeah.
But that's just because my partner's family is a bit from there.
Right. So. Fair enough. Rottnest or down south for your West Aussie holidays?
Rottnest. Yeah.
Okay. Rottnest. All right. And your favourite circuit back home in New Zealand? And it can't be Taupo just because you won there. It can be if it is ever. What's your favourite circuit? Everyone loves this. There's so many great circuits down there.
Probably say, I think Pukekohe was my favourite to race on in supercars.
Yep.
And I think even if we raced on other tracks, probably that'd be my favourite.
Mm-hmm.
Just wild, old school, rough, like fast.
Yeah.
But Highlands is a really good one. Just if you have a Ferrari, something you want to go cut some laps, really cool.
Yeah.
So that's probably the two.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and best of luck. You got another home round coming up. You got two home rounds in a row. That's
it's tiring. Get roped into everything.
Exactly. So, best of luck. I mean, if low grip sort of tighter stuff is working for you guys, then Perth could feasibly be another good round. So,
Who knows? Fingers crossed.
That is the case. We'll be back in the next couple of weeks with a new episode of the Hard Card Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the Authentic Collectibles YouTube channel and hit the little bell to make sure you never miss an episode.